The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
All are welcome. We're glad you found us. Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Discover hope and healing from the other side. Welcome to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesman.
Listen, they're all around you, close as a thought or a memory.
Messages of Hope.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm just back from hiking on a beautiful trail in Montana. Ty and I are now outside of the beautiful small town or small city of Bozeman, Montana. And I just can't believe what happened this morning. I was doing a reading, so Ty went out for a walk before our hike. And I got an email a little while later from a woman who follows my work, but we've never met. And she said, "Was that Ty I passed on the road in Bozeman, Montana?" Can you believe that, everybody, from anybody in the whole world? She said she's on vacation from the Washington, D.C. area, and she had an intuitive hit that she would run into us on this trip. And so we're going to get together tonight. I just love how the web works. So with that little bit of magic, we are going to now introduce my guest today. Her name is Joy Sackett Wood, and she's coming to us from England, where it's 9 o'clock at night. Not too late for her, but she has a wonderful new book called From Whole, H-O-L-E, to Whole, W-H-O-L-E, Embracing the Transformational Power of Grief and Loss. I know so many of you tune into this program because you are trying to come to terms with the passing of a loved one. And I hate how we say the word loss, but we can't get around it in our language. But my work and Joy's work is all about showing us that it doesn't have to be seen as a loss. So, Joy, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really, really excited to be here and talking with you. Thank you so much.
I know your book is doing very well, and I'd like to start by you sharing your work background before we talk about the book. I prefer not to read people's biographies. I like to hear it in their own words. So tell everybody your story.
Oh, okay. Well, my story is quite long and diverse because I'm a, you know, older person. My first career was in fashion design, and my second career was in secondary school teaching for 20 years or so. I actually taught religious studies, which is not a very sexy subject, but it was one that I felt very passionate about and taught it from a sociological and philosophical approach. So and so naturally I transferred my skills, deciding to retrain as a counsellor and psychotherapist, and that then went into hypnotherapy, went into Reiki, went into hypnoreiki, so all sorts of modalities, and I've been in my own therapeutic business now for 13 years. So that's where I'm coming from. Yeah.
I love that you've had various careers, and so many of us can identify with following your passion, and your name is Joy, following your joy. And I find it rather interesting, though, that your new career prepared you for what happened to you in your personal life. Would you share that with us, please?
Yeah. Well, I have, like I say, I've been working therapeutically with people for a very long time, and I've worked with grief and helping people through their grief experiences with my training and experiences. But it wasn't until the actual pass of my own son, which happened suddenly and unexpectedly in October 2018, just one day before his big 40th birthday. And I was obviously traumatized and bereaved, and found myself going through a major grief experience myself, that I, you know, experience it in a way that I hadn't experienced grief experiences before. I mean, the loss of a mum and a dad and a brother and other friends and people. But the loss of my son suddenly and unexpectedly was, quite a major, significant time in my life. So using my therapeutic knowledge and awareness, I knew that I would need to tend to my grief needs. And I chose to do that in my way. And I felt quite passionately that I didn't really want to become, a victim in my experience. I wanted to take charge of it. I wanted to go with the flow of it and go through my process in it. And my way of doing it was to do a lot of reading and research and give myself time out. So the fact that I am, although a qualified person, didn't stop me from having the pain and the suffering and,
Yeah, that was going to be my big question. I know that's what everybody wanted to know. So was it easier for you because you knew what you knew, or you know what you know?
I think it helped prepare me. I think I had the inner knowledge and understanding that I would have to go through a process, which is a well-known process in therapeutic terms by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. But I also wanted to tend to it in my way and take control of the situation. So everything that had gone on, through the grief of the getting over the trauma, I had an awareness of the impact it would have on my brain, which is what I write about in the book, the power of the neuroplasticity to help us to address the trauma. A lot of people don't understand that. They're not aware that the brain actually is flooded with a chemical called cortisol and puts us into fight or flight. So I was understanding on one level exactly what I was experiencing and what I helped other people with. But it was my own experience, of course, as well, that I was tentatively caring and managing at the same time as dealing with what I had to deal with. So as much as I had the professional understanding and the knowledge, I also had to, on another level, just cope with it and find my way through it.
So that raises a question in my mind. You said that you were already counseling people who were in grief. Did you have any moments, and perhaps not, when you thought, oh, I was counseling people this way or that way, but it's so different now that it's me?
Not in truth, no. The compassion and understanding that I had before and the knowledge and experience was there. But this was a different kind of grief because it was my son. And I think, it's because of the bonding and the attachment that makes it unique and different. So what it has done is helped me to understand people who have had a loss of a child more significantly. Yeah. And that was part of my learning growth. That was something that I wasn't really prepared for. And in that effect, that's given me a better understanding when I have got someone that comes to see me. And I must say, I put my work on hold for 3 months and over to make sure I was, present for my clients. I wasn't going to put myself in the position where I wasn't totally for them. Yeah.
I don't know. You must be psychic because that was my next question for you. I do know several counselors who have had very close family members transition, like your son, Jack, and they definitely put that on hold. How did you know you were ready to go back to work?
I could feel it in myself. I knew that I was had processed most of the overwhelming emotions. Which at first is the overthinking, the hypersensitivity, the feeling of, the lack of concentration, anxiety, oversensitivity.
Tell me about overthinking. I don't understand that term as it relates to grief.
Yeah, that's due to the trauma. So the brain, while it's processing this awful and unexpected shock experience. It's almost like having an electric shock go through us. Yeah, it shakes us all up on every level. So with the cortisol, we get into fight or flight. So literally, the body, we're geared up, the primeval part of the brain, for survival. So, it works with getting our muscles into tension to help us either to put up the fight or go for the flee away from the threat. Well, of course, if it's a threat that we can't run or put up fight, it stays stuck in the body. It literally stays absorbed into our, physical body, our rational body, our mental self, our emotional self, and our spiritual self and our energetic self, which is what I explain in the book. So it's all a natural process. And in that natural process, sleep is disrupted because we are still in that state of disturbance where the brain is trying to understand the unexplainable, the inexplicable, something's happened, a terrible thing has happened out of out of order and unexpected. So we haven't got any remit to go by because memory is all about pattern making. And so if we haven't had that experience before, we can't draw upon anything. The memory hasn't got anything in the subconscious to help us to cope. So we get all disturbed and it's a natural thing, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and on every level. So no matter how prepared we might think we are, this is the unprepared thing, yeah? So we don't sleep very well because the cortisol is still running around in the body. We need to find a way of being able to deal with that. Our concentration levels then are affected because we're poor sleep. Everything is disturbed. We don't wake up refreshed and ready for a new day because sleep helps us to not just make new cells and, hair, skin, and nails. We're recharging our cellular self as well. So every single part of our being is not being refreshed and re-energized.
So it's like the snowball effect.
It is a snowball effect on every single level. Then we get poor appetite. Most people either get a loss of appetite, mostly because the digestive system is disturbed. Might get physical aches and pains as well in the early stages of grief. So the reason why I felt compelled to write the book was to help people to understand this, that what they're going through is absolutely part of the grief its journey or experience that they're having.
I can hear a lot of my readers right now saying, yes, that's me. I definitely identify with that.
Yeah. And when people first come to me, for grief and they're experiencing grief, many feel that they don't understand what's happening to them because they don't know about the grief.
Sure, the new experience and one we never would ask to have because it's so miserable. But we'll jump ahead because I wanted to get in this in the second half, but we might as well now. How do you deal with the physiological aspects like the cortisol that's rushing through the system?
I offer lots of suggestions and tools and techniques to help people through that in my built through the resilience process, the model that I've devised. And it is building a resilience, but it's being kind to themselves and actually going with the flow. It's actually letting ourselves go with that. And if we can't sleep, to get up. And if we want to do something creative, read or use that time more effectively, that's a suggestion I would make. A lot of artists and people who are very creative don't sleep through the night very often. That's when they're most inspired. And this is what I found too. And also it's attending to eating healthily and when they can eat, even if it's little and often, getting fresh air, going for a walk, going for exercise. So really being compassionate and nurturing to themselves.
Yeah. Are there any physiological tools that come to mind that can, when you're aware that you're hyper and just the thoughts don't stop coming, are there breathing techniques you recommend or something else in the moment to just calm the system?
Absolutely. There's one technique, especially, it's quite effective but very simple, and that's 3 to 5 breathing. Literally just breathing in for the nose for 3 and out for the nose for 5.
Because that's infecting. Yeah, that's my go-to.
Yeah. And it's in for the nose and out for the nose, because that way it's, you know, the brain, it's telling the brain to be calm. The brain affects the thought, affects the way we feel and our emotions. So then we got a better feeling because we're doing something proactively, and so we feel better straight away. And then the body does calm because the body responds to the messages that the brain and the emotional self is giving. And then that has an impact on the way we act. So it might sound very simplistic, but it's a good place to start. Absolutely. To reduce some of the anxiety and the stress, because there is anxiety and stress due to the overwhelm of the emotions. Yeah.
Well, your book is very, very practical, and we'll talk more about those tools. I thank you for what you're sharing already. This is very, very helpful for folks. But you also do tell a bit of your story. How did that feel to share your personal story in a clinical book?
I did feel quite vulnerable. I was exposing myself. Part of being a therapist and a counsellor is we don't disclose much about ourselves. It's part of the boundaries, and it is part of the ethics. And it is appropriate. It's absolutely appropriate. But I couldn't leave it out. I just couldn't leave it out, Suzanne, because it was so profound and so significant that, you know, my son was able to communicate with me from the moment that I, you know, once I got over the reeling of the emotion, he came through very quickly.
Well, let's go right there. First, tell us about Jack. And then this is the part that I always love in the Messages of Hope show, that I heard a bunch of people perking up just then, like, what? What? So you just connected with their son since he passed? So tell us about Jack and how he's communicated with you.
Well, straight away, I got an indication of what happened, because I was away on holiday. At the time, Jack was coming up to his 40th birthday. He died on the 27th of October 2018. His birthday was on the 28th of October, and it was his 40th. So we were coming back from Gran Canaria after a two-week wonderful holiday away, planning what we're going to do to surprise him for his birthday. So got in, as soon as I put the suitcases down, got a call from my ex-husband, John's father. I knew straight away it was bad news. And yes, it was the most awful news that any mother would want to hear. So after I'd had my trauma experience, which I will record in my book, I was able to calm myself down with my techniques and the others that I talk about in the book. And before I could speak to his sister, and when I spoke to his sister, she came over. I got this wow of the sensation of his presence and a pain shooting down my right leg. I actually screamed because it was so bad. And the post-mortem actually showed that he had a blood clot in his leg. And so he communicated what happened right away.
Let me just take a moment, if I could. In my readings, I also experience the physical symptoms about 95% of the time of how someone in the spirit world passed. And it's because everything that we experience is frequency, energy and information communicated through consciousness. And so to get that message through to you, he simply had to merge with you and share with you a frequency that creates the sense of pain. That was beautifully evidential.
Yeah, it really was. And it was the start. It was just the start of how things were going to change my life.
Tell more. Tell us more.
It was amazing. Absolutely incredible. During the time that I was planning his funeral, things were happening. He was communicating, you know, various things to me.
And we want and details, Joy. We need details. Yeah, we got to have the details.
Well, the first thing was I obviously wasn't prepared. So that's something I talk about in the book, getting prepared for everybody to plan what they want, because it's going to be helpful. And I offer free resources on my website for that. So I think the main thing was I decided to paint his coffin lid because when they were little, with my children, I used to make them birthday cards. It was part of something I would do. It would be a loving thing I would like to do for them, quite creative. So I just got this real desire and urge to lovingly do that for Jack on his coffin lid. So I had to go through a lot of process to get the coffin lid and to do the painting. And I painted, it was a visualization that I had. It was through meditation that came through, and it was a heart with some white feathers and all the chakra colors and hearts flowing down. And I did the rainbow and some clouds because I just felt he was in a good place. He was in a better place. But I painted the heart red. And I went to bed and I just couldn't sleep. I was being really, really disturbed because the heart wasn't right. And I don't know why, but the red wasn't right. So I kind of got up. I think they were coming to pick up the lid about 9 o'clock. The funeral service were coming to pick it up at 9 o'clock. I got up about 3, 4 o'clock and I thought, I've just got to paint over it white. And it just felt right. Mm-hmm. Off they went with this lid. I'm not really sure what they made of it, but at the actual funeral, one of my long-term best friends, who Jack considered to be an auntie, did a reading, and she talked about red hearts being temporal of this life, of the physical world, but the white heart is for peace and of the spiritual world.
Nice validation of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I put his picture in the heart. And the funny thing is later, much later, I'd got a reading from an evidential medium that I know locally. And Jack came through to her and he was laughing and he was pointing at his halo. And he said, I'm an angel now, Mum. I'm an angel now. And he was saying he loved white, you know, what it did with the coffin. And he was laughing and saying it because when he was alive, he would often say, I ain't no angel, Mum. I'll never be an angel. There's been quite a lot, actually. There's a lot of validations and it's been quite amazing. Yeah.
Very, very helpful. Wow. Now, were you on a spiritual journey already before Jack's death? And or either way, how has it changed since he passed?
I'd always been interested and quite a little bit here, a little bit there, and dabbling around and curious. But I think just before Jack, we were very, very much, we were talking a lot more on the phone about spiritual things in that way and philosophical things. And I think it was it was just before he transited that I was going on courses. I was starting to wanting to be part of development groups more so. I had been for a long time, but it wasn't over, you know, it was just, you know, going through the interest. I was just curious more than anything.
So when you use the word development groups and you're in England, to me, that means somebody who's developing the ability to tune into those in spirit. Was it that kind of a circle?
Yeah, that's what it was like. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because I know you said you taught religious studies earlier, but this was before Jack transitioned? You had started?
Yeah, I've been with them for some time, but it was something I was very interested in, but not that involved in, if I might say, because I had so many other things I was doing. So it was just something I was connecting with in a different level. I've done the Reiki and I'd been learning Reiki, and that was opening up my sensitivities as well. So there was things happening. I was on the journey.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely evolving and going on a journey. Yeah.
Right. And what is your relationship with Jack like now across the veil?
Amazing. Jack has become a teacher to me. He's there's lots of ways he communicates and signs and, you know, crystals, actually, which I never knew about anything about crystals before Jack transisted. And he often, I can feel him and I can see in my mind's eye crystals, and those crystals are significant to whatever the person that I'm with. So if I'm doing Reiki, I was learning through that. Been amazing. I mean, some of the things he does, he's very clever. In words, I can hear, I can write in. So from doing, I did two courses with you, I hope you don't mind me saying, Suzanne, because absolutely propelled me in being able to understand, but also to communicate on a deeper level with him.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that. I was wondering how you reached out to me to share your book with me, and I was curious how you'd found me, so I'm glad to hear that. We're talking with Joy Sackett Wood, and we're going to talk much more when we come back from the break about more of these practical tools for going from a hole in the heart to wholeness. So come on back after 3 minutes.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Welcome to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back. You're listening to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesemann.
We're enjoying a wonderful conversation with Joy Sackett Wood. She's the author of From Whole, H-O-L-E, to Whole, W-H-O-L-E. And I know we're all familiar with that feeling of a giant hole in our heart when somebody who's part of our life is no longer physically present. It's like a part of us is missing. And Joy, you were saying on the break, we were just before the break saying you'd taken a couple of my courses. You were saying that you knew Jack had something to do with that because you weren't on my mailing list and suddenly my courses just showed up on your computer.
Yes. just out of the blue. I have no idea how, but there you were on from the Shift Network advertising your course. And I just was right. I felt the presence, the energy present, and I knew that's what I was being led to do, because I've been looking for someone to really direct and, help me.
Well, your son would have known that, and I love how you followed that nudge. So clearly, you found a nice balance between your professional work as a psychotherapist, a counselor, and bringing in the metaphysical aspects of this. I remember in an email that you shared with me, you said that some of your colleagues were a bit taken aback when your book took a metaphysical turn. Would you share that with us?
Yeah. I think that what it was is that it's on so many different levels. The feedback's been really good. And the idea of being able to still have a communication with your loved one, I think that coming into to play with the work that I do, they might feel that it crosses some sort of other kind of levels and barriers, but they were fine. I mean, I've got some really, pleasing, they read the book and they found it really interesting and actually learned from it themselves. And actually, some have referred it to their clients. They've actually, recommended it. I think it was just the initial ideas. Some of the ideas that's in there were what opening up their consciousness. And that's what I intend and hope for the book, is
that's
that right. I found through my, by reading and all the things that I engaged in the referencing that I did, was all about transitioning the loss of pain into, you know, the sense of joy and the sense of peace. And, yeah, the, you know, filling that hole with wholeness.
Yes. And so what are some of the issues and tools that you share in the book that are more on the metaphysical side?
What I suggest is that, you know, people do start to allow themselves some peace and quiet and meditation in order to be able to engage in that intuitive part of themselves, because we all have it. But the busyness of everyday life and, you know, the demands of work and business, and there's a lot of people I know are running their own businesses, doesn't give the option to be able to take a lot of time out. But in order to self-nurture ourselves, especially through grief, I think we need to be able to do that. So some of the tools or the suggestions that I make is becoming more intuitive and focusing more on that dimension, what people call spiritual. You know, there's different ways of explaining what spiritual is. Of course, it might be the traditional religion, or it might well be, you know, more, you know, looking at things in a more holistic way. So all the way through the book, through my resilient model, talk about how we can raise our consciousness to a greater level and to be more open and allow ourselves to be more open to ideas and spiritual connections and new ways of having a different mindset growth.
And what does that mean to you, if I could interrupt a second? What does that mean to you to raise one's consciousness?
It's through learning and education, and opening to new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think people are often questioning. In my experience, people do ponder and reflect and are curious. And I think grief is an opportunity to do that more so. It makes us question life. When someone has a death and we wonder where they've gone, what's happened, is there such thing as God, is there, you know, an afterlife, is there such a thing as a goodness when this has happened to me. So people do automatically become more questioning, and that's part of the process in a grief. So while that is happening, what I would suggest is that they open their mind up to the more deeper possibilities and reflections. So they're like prompts, more like prompts and suggestions throughout the book. Now, you might try this, you might suggest this, you might find this helpful, you might like to read this book, you might, you know, perhaps engage in watching this YouTube or TED talk on some, because it's just prompts to help to expand that and enable to have a new maybe perspective on life. Because I think when we go through this shake-up, which is part of that trauma, then life is not the same again, and we're not the same again, and our life has changed. So in what way has it changed? Are we going to allow it to shrink us? Are we going to allow it to the pain to keep us trapped in a place of sadness and sorrow, or are we going to take it to enable us to expand, to grow, and to actually transcend that pain? So the suggestions that are there are to encourage that.
Beautiful. I'm seeing the scales here with balance in my mind that I'd like you to speak about. Okay, we raise our consciousness through research and reading and thinking about these things. But how about the compassion and love side of raising our consciousness? Address that, won't you?
Yes, of course. Raising our consciousness through love is being more connected. So learning to become more kind to ourselves and compassionate to ourselves. Mm-hmm. But in effect, that will then have more compassion towards others. So when we understand that actually loving ourselves is important and actually very much part of being connected to others, then, you know, loving is raising our energy vibrations.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what comes to mind, you now as what we call a shining light parent with your child, who's your shining light across the veil, and now you're a shining light for others with your book and the help you're bringing to everyone to deal with these, the grief and the issues that come up from that. What advice do you have for especially parents who I see really dealing with guilt when a child passes? So many times when there's really no reason for the parent to have guilt.
Yeah, that comes up quite a lot. Guilt is very much part of the difficulty for some parents. Well, it doesn't help them to be able to shift through the process. So I would suggest that they would consider, would their child really want them to feel like that? Is that a loving child would not want their, you know, parent to be beating themselves up and feeling bad and feeling unhappy and stressful. Often people, when you move through as well, they forgot where they were at when the child was around and when they were younger. We're all busy. We all got other things going on. We all got other maybe children to look after and or businesses and commitments and responsibilities. And, you know, we're only human beings. And our children know that. They absolutely know that. And, you know, there is this place of self-forgiveness and allowance to forgive themselves and to find that way of processing it, that the child definitely wouldn't want us to be stuck in that process. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, is because I have met people for 6 years, 7 years, still feeling very much in that deep sense of grief because of all these reasons of regret and remorse and anger. Anger keeps us there. That's very much part of it. And really, that is then not living this life as they would want us to live our lives.
It's such a great point that you make there, because it's not the kind of thing we think about when we don't know that our loved ones are still with us and watching us and aware of our feelings. But once you come to know that they are still right here, still part of your life, and very much aware and feeling what you're feeling, that really changes things. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Absolutely, which is why I put the examples in the book about my experiences with Jack, even though at the time I felt a bit vulnerable about it. I was a bit shy because I felt like, you know, being in the spiritual closet, so to speak. Sure. It's important to do that, to encourage others that this is possible if they want it.
Yeah. Right. Is there anything you would have done differently in how you dealt with Jack's passing or writing the book?
No, I don't think so. The whole process was just so guided and given, the way it came into being, the way that it, every chapter that I wrote, everything about it, the idea of the resilience, anagram, the name, the pictures, everything in the book has all been inspired. So
I love that. I love that. So you've mentioned several times now this resilience process. I believe that's your own term for what you teach. Please tell us about that.
Well, when I was in my early stages of grief, and I was reading, because that's what I do, because I enjoy reading, and reading's always got me through all my difficult times and adversities in the past, I came across a book, and the book was about the other side of sadness. And in that book, George Bonono, he actually did the first scientific study on grief. He was American, and it was paid for, and he did an intensive study and experiments and testing on grief in all cultures. Very amazing book, really.
What is his name?
George Bonono.
Okay.
Yeah, and The Other Side of Sadness. It's really revealing, really interesting book. And what I came across that really was significant to me and spoke to me was he was interviewing people that the parents and people that had lost relatives in the Twin Towers. And one that he spoke to was a mother, and the mother seemed quite, she had gone back to work and she was getting on with her. And he said, what is about you that made you be able to bounce back or get, return to more normality than the other people I've spoken to have been absolutely devastated? And she said, I've got resilience.
Resilience, yeah.
My life adversities and things that I learned, I've got an inner strength, I got resilience. And not only that, my daughter wouldn't want me not to go back to work, not to lose my business, not to feed my her brothers and sisters and pay the bills. It's not what she would want. And she had resilience. So it seemed to me that that was an appropriate word to use. So each of the chapters in the book begins with the first letter of resilience. So I've got resilience, which is response, dealing with the practicalities, education, which is learning all about grief and what, how it affects us physically, mentally, emotionally, and all the other ways. Surrender, which is making choices, helping us to become more courageous, or giving into the absolute spectrum of emotions that will come through the grief. And I'm encouraged to be able to grieve our way, our own way, and moving through in our own healthy way. Taking the initiative, that's developing our own awareness and strategies in order to move through the grief as our own, because everyone's individuals. We all experience it individually. Nobody, not one, is the same. And each, like we said, each grief is different. So it's bearing that in mind, but also being aware of if someone runs a business, of how it would impact their employees, their staff. I was reaching out to people that run their own business, how it would affect them, how to help them through that. Love. It's the, the L, the resilience, and that's all about self-nurturing, self-care, being on to self, making healthy choices and for our own well-being, so we can help others too. And then it goes into a deeper level in the second part with intuition. That's where we start the spiritual stuff, or the questioning what is meaning of faiths, and where cultures come in, and, all of the different spiritual shifts and ideas in that way. And then empowerment is all about building our confidence and getting stronger for our new learnings, our new knowledge, and expanding ourselves. So this is our spiritual growth and development. And then N is the next level, so that's even going higher into consciousness and personal transition of development. So it goes as far as you want to take it, basically. It's for everyone to take what they want and where they feel they can, and come back to it even. So that's the mindset growth. And then change, it's going through that transition, but finding peace in that transition. And that's interconnectedness, and it's all the spiritual aspects, and still being obviously in connection with our loved one, if that's what we want. And that's our spiritual growth. And then E is the evolution. That's us evolving, and the evidence of a continuing soul journey that takes us from whole, H-O-L-E, to whole, W-H-O-L-E, and to the next layer, which is our energetic growth. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there, and there's a lot of different levels, and there's lots of but it's not to overwhelm. People who've read it said that they find it quite easy reading. They read it quite quickly, but then they come back and then take what they want from it, where they're at that stage, and help them through.
I love that you're a woman after my own heart. Anybody that studied with me knows, with my military background, I love acronyms. And the fact that you came up with this path to turn resilience into an acronym, even if we can't remember what they stand for, as you were going through it, I couldn't wait to find out what is C and what is E. It's very, very cool, the different levels. I know that when people are grieving, they want tools. They want to dig their way out from the most painful thing they've ever gone through. It's that suffering leads to openings, and that's just brilliant. It's very empowering, everything you just shared.
Yeah, and that's why another reason why I really felt compelled to write it is that when people said to me, I don't know, will I ever, you know, what's happening to me? I don't understand. You know, the grief creates people feeling that they're off balance, and they are off balance mm-hmm. because this trauma. And it is a shock, and it is something that takes time to be able to work through. People can't just get over it. They can't just come through it. They can't just move on. It's something that, you know, we go through individually, each at our own pace and time. And it's the same for each member of the family too. So I wanted to help people to understand that.
So you say it takes time, and now it's 2.5 years since Jack passed, and you've worked through a lot of this, but I'm sure that you still get waves of sadness and memories. What do you do in that moment when the waves wash over you?
Well, I let it happen. I feel it. I allow myself to feel that sadness and grief, and then I look at his picture and I look at him smiling at me. He's saying, come on, Mom, you know, so you know you're going to be okay. You know it's all right. You know I'm here. I'm still here with you. You know that.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So one thing I like about your book is how each chapter ends with suggestions to help you. Very, very helpful. Give us some more suggestions for those who just feel stuck.
Suggestions for people who feel stuck. Yeah. When people feel stuck, it's usually because they are not able to feel that they're getting their needs met or understood. So I would suggest that, obviously one of the things I would come back to is read my book, because there are so many suggestions in there. And they just came to me as I was writing it, and you know, helping people through that tough time is to remember the good times. Remember the you know, I made a memory book of Jack when in the early stages of my grief, and it just helped me to process some of the things. And I think when we get stuck, it's that feeling of really, where am I going to go from here? What is going on? What would I really want? What do I need to do? So the suggestions that I make, I'm not sure if I'm making it very clear, is to be proactive. It's always good to be able to just find something, even if it's a small thing to do, that's going to enable you to go get shifted. So by being proactive, we feel empowered. It's empowering us. So when we say about suggestions, I mean, is it that you're feeling that, you know, that you're physically not feeling very well? Well, what can I do to improve my health and well-being? Would it be helpful to go and have some, you know, treatments like a Reiki treatment, because that's really nourishing and relaxing? It's also a healing treatment. Would it be helpful to do some EFT and move myself through this, which is another energy technique that I, you know, you can learn that for yourself. It's a self-help tool. I did a little video on my website to help people to do that for themselves. Excellent. Yeah. Would it be that you need to do some reading? Would it be that you want to go out and speak to a friend and have a coffee and phone a friend? You know, it's all about being proactive, those suggestions.
Let me just give people your website now in case they don't have something they can see in front of them. It's your name, Joy Sackett, S-A-C-K-E-T-T, wood.com. So I love that you have those tools available there as well.
And it's all free. There's a lot of free resources that's not in the book, but I do refer to some things in the book, and I've actually built on them since. So lots of free stuff there for people if they want it. And
Thank you.
Found it helpful. Yeah.
You used the word earlier, opportunity, in as far as seeing the passing of a loved one as an opportunity, which it kind of makes your heart go, ooh, how can I see that? That seems wrong somehow. Would you expand on?
I need to expand on that. I think because of my experiences, I was able to say to myself, well, I don't want to be a victim here. I want to be able to manage my own grief. I want to be able to do things the way I want to do them. I want to, as Jack didn't leave any of his wishes of what he wanted for the funeral or anything like that, and prep, you know, the things that happen. I wanted to be able to make all those decisions myself. So I found it as an opportunity to allow myself to be as empowered as possible in that difficult situation. But also in grief, coming through the grief into a transitional state. So learning about yourself more, learning to become more emotionally intelligent. And I think it's a time when people really are not knocked off their, you know, what their normal course of life. And it really does make people, you know, aware of their emotions probably more than any other time. When they don't understand it, maybe some people don't understand it and they worry about it, or they get into, you know, other ways of trying to cope, which aren't healthy ways of coping. But there are opportunities within it in order to be able to develop personally, personal development, emotional development, spiritual development, energetic development, yeah, rational development. So it could be, you can turn it around, everything yin and yang and everything. We can turn anything around to our, you know, an advantage. And it's not intended in a disrespectful or insensitive way by any means. I really don't.
But no, people will look back years after a traumatic event or a challenging event and say, see how much they've grown. I didn't mean in any way that you intended it was insulting, and I know people didn't take it that way. I just wanted you to share some more of what you meant by that.
Yeah.
So resilience, with just 1 minute to go here, what if people just say, I wasn't born that way? Is it something they can gain?
Oh, absolutely. I believe, well, I'm an educator, so I'm going to say that, aren't I? You know, I've taken students all the way through from year 7 to year 12, and I've seen them get GCSEs or A-levels and go on to university. I'm bound to say that, and I really do believe it. I believe that we can learn it, and education is empowerment, and learning our conscious development is empowerment, and learning our energetic awareness is empowerment, and spiritual growth is empowerment. The whole, everything is empowerment, and we can learn. I believe we all are able to evolve and grow, and it's part of our soul journey. It's part of our growth. It's part of where we, you know, we need to be. And yes, life throws things at us. Challenges are always coming, and just as you think you've got over one, probably another one will come along, because that's part of our soul learnings and our soul journey.
Absolutely. And you have just empowered everybody to jump out there and learn more, empower themselves. I love how you model that, Joy. So thank you so much for being on the show. And everybody, I highly encourage you to read Joy's book, From Whole to Whole. And thank you so much for being part of our journey, Joy.
Oh, thank you so much. Absolutely lovely. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
If you're inspired by the teachings of Dr. Wayne Dyer, you will love the Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life podcast with Nadia De La Cruz.
You are a spiritual being having a human experience. My name is Nadia De La Cruz, and I started the Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life podcast to explore spiritual topics like manifestation and meditation with guests who share their own stories of insight, awakening, and transformation. Listen now on the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network or wherever you get your podcasts.